As far as nutrient management planning, obviously we're looking to balance crop production with environmental quality. We can't forget that. Nutrient management, as it's done, is done all over the place, quite extensively. Here's a map of 2006, and the darker the color, the more nutrient management is going on in that part of the country. So you see obvious involvement, and this is just the program-related activity as far as USDA goes, and there's obviously a lot more than that. As far as the 590 itself, when we talk about nutrient management, it's managing the application, the amount, the source, the timing, and the placement of nutrients and soil amendments. Newer term is the four R's, right rate, right form, right timing, right placement. So what we want to do with this next revision that we have is build in some flexibility. Does that look familiar, Jim? Yeah. Look at that. How'd we do that? We want to shift from this individual approach of the individual producer having a plan to this individual and group planning concept. Include criteria for the adaptive nutrient management process. And in order for that to work, it has to be accepted at the land-grant university level. And it has to have this locally collected data and accepted protocols that we've touched on already. We'll talk about that some more. We need to be able to adjust from those land-grant university recommendations or FERTRECs. As Doug Beagle said, they're a starting point. You know, they're not the ultimate. That's a level or a condition to look at, and we go from there. Is that right, Doug? And we also have to be consistent with the EPA CAFO rule and also our NRCS CNMP policy in doing this. So we want to adapt the rate, the form, the timing and placement. Work with the land grant folks to understand and to know that we're going to be adapting those recommendations to be more site specific and time sensitive. Tracy alluded to the timing aspect that you know, we really need to focus more on. We, to a large extent, are working on nutrient management, but we may not be hitting on all four of those R's. We might have the right rate, but do we have the right form? Do we have the right timing? Do we have the right method of application? So another piece to that. And as Tom mentioned, that participatory learning approach and process is something we need to build into that. What we currently have in 590, the standard deals more with the certainty and the knowns versus in that adaptive management concept, the uncertainty or the changes or unknowns. Core facts about nutrient management planning, the way the 590 is currently set up, and with the adaptive approach, looking more at the art and the science as we pool our data, look across the fence row, and not just have it be that individual information. We talk about nutrient management, especially as we work, like was said, in a 3-year or 5-year approach for a nutrient management plan. It's more of a strategic plan. You know, in this time period, can you manage your manure or your nutrients? It's prescriptive. It's not so much tactical and flexible. So we want to try to build as much or more of that in to the process as we can. Can't forget the nutrient efficiency, obviously continue natural resource protection, environmental protection, and economics, profitability has to play into it as well. Along with the 590 standard, and by the way, there's a draft version of draft one that was released in the back of the room, if anybody's interested and hasn't seen it yet. The comment period for the first revision closed on Monday, although I heard yesterday, that comments will be accepted through today. And what will happen in the next 6 weeks, 2 months, is those comments that have come in will be reviewed, be worked into a second draft, and that will be posted in the Federal Register sometime near the end of the year, probably or early next year, depending how soon it gets in. Once we submit something, we don't really know how soon it'll actually hit the Federal Register, but then it'll have an open comment period of 45 days. So that's the official public open comment period. So be looking for that. If anybody has any difficulty, contact any of us or contact myself, and we'll make sure that you have the opportunity to comment on it. As far as the standard, you know, we will be updating that. The nutrient management policy is another document that we have internally that just sets the sideboards. But the key thing that'll have to happen at the state level is the state 590 nutrient management practice standard will have to be modified or be changed once we have the national 590 standard out. So you'll see a trickle effect over the next year or so, that once that 590, hopefully in the March timeframe, comes out, states will be beginning the process of making changes and modifying their 590. So be looking for that, be looking for opportunity to get involved in that process in your state. NRCS tech notes are coming, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And also some collaborative information templates and fact sheets through the NERA group. We had a meeting last night, some of you were there. We're talking about creating various other pieces of information, whether it's a template or a guideline on how you can actually do this in your state as a group. Tech notes, these have been a while in coming, been working on those. The first one is the adaptive management background and strategies, and it primarily focuses on nitrogen. As Tom mentioned in the introductory remarks, we're kind of focusing right now on the nitrogen aspects. So that is in draft format. There's actually an early draft in the back of the room. Again, if anybody is interested in reviewing it and providing comments, I can also provide it electronically for people to review and provide comments. But there's a series of four of these that we're looking at. The first one, like I said, is out, and I will be providing through the NERA site and posting the official draft here maybe later this week or early next week. We got some early comments in, and we've been manipulating or making a few more changes. But the second one is evaluation tools, both the in-season and post-season tools that are out there, trying to provide a document as concise as possible that will provide some information there. Then as far as the adaptive management concept, some group coordination and participatory learning is the third tech note, and then the steps to adaptive management, making it work, is the fourth one that we're looking at. Like I said, tech note two is in a draft stage, will come out hopefully within the next month or so. Three and four are in various stages of development and draft, and hopefully we'll have those sometime early next year available as a draft. We hope to have them all out and, you know, out for review, comment period, and finalized by, hopefully, by March of 2011. Once we have that information out and the 590 standard comes out and everything like that, there's an educational component and educational rollout that will need to take place. And it's not only that from an NRCS standpoint, we're looking at our field practitioners, we're looking at a whole gamut of folks, whether it's a land-grant university, TSPs, industry folks, and the like. And it's not that NRCS is the one that's going to go out there and say, hey, we've got this, this, and this for you. It's going to be a concerted effort by everybody, whether it's a land-grant person, an extension person. As you've seen in the discussions, it's not just one entity. It's trying to bring these entities together work collaboratively and try to work at this adaptive management process, all in the hope to get this participatory process and the producers involved in making better decisions. Tom showed you this, the overall concept, and now we're moving in the nutrient management planning itself. Again, we have the plan, we develop a plan to evaluate what we have, move into a evaluation phase, can hopefully learn from that as we do any adjustment, and then we continue the cycle on and on. Okay, our next challenge then for the group, we have three questions. So if you were tasked with implementing adaptive management strategies in your state, so think about this from your perspective in your locality, first thing would be, what obstacles might you run into? What resources would you need is number two. And third, in your state, what key stakeholders would you include? We talked about this a little bit early on a global basis or larger scale, but in your state, are there key stakeholders? Is there anything different in your state that would make you unique as far as bringing any key stakeholders in? And then as we discuss this, you always have to keep in mind, how do we know if our efforts are successful? But Sandy's gonna break the groups up. We're not gonna have every group do every question. We're gonna have certain groups focus on certain questions, and I'll leave that to Sandy how she breaks those up. It's all you.
Arbitrarily. Huh?
Yeah, I stuck that one up there and it's still holding, so.
Okay. And what, about 10 minutes?
We have actually, I don't know, you wrote it down, 10 or 15 minutes to work on this?
15
minutes.
I don't need that.
So.
All right, we're going to get started with the groups. We'll start with group one as far as what obstacles might you run into, and these work on that. And did this group want to start? No? Okay. All right. Then this group can start. And if we could get a spokesperson to go over what you have.
So we have a whole lot of things, but some key things are there's unfamiliarity with both the concepts of the science, but also of the process and the education. And that.
And you have about two minutes or
okay.
So, just so you know what you're working
thank you. And then there's technological obstacles, so maybe we don't have the right tools yet. There's sort of the timing, the logistics of management, where side dress is often difficult for farmers to do. A lot of the time there's the what's in it for me on the part of the farmer if they don't understand all the underlying processes, and if we're not managing the risk so the farmer has the entire burden of the risk, then that's going to make a big obstacle to adoption. Lack of answers and the fact that a lot of farmers don't realize that there's a lack of answers, so they look to the extension system to already have the answer, and that's an obstacle to making it an adaptive approach. Lack of flexibility in both the standards but also in mindsets. A lot of people come at it with, we know it already and this is the way we've always done it. And, this, you know. And then sort of the structure of agriculture, just the way things work in terms of the logistics, the machinery. Right, no current insurance, so that goes back to the risk management factor. A lot of these things could be insured. We want you to decrease the amount of nitrogen you apply, but if you have a loss in yield, then we will pay you that amount. That could be insured. That's not currently in place. And we don't currently have a working structure for adaptive management. So that's what we came up with. Did I summarize that appropriately?
Yep, great. Okay, thank you. I have the other group that worked on the
over there and went through the list.
Oh, okay.
Like you do.
Basically, in terms of obstacles, we talked about probably the principal one was the financial and human resources. Who has the expertise to do that? And it's going to vary state by state. And then tied back into that financial would be profitability. Are producers willing to take that risk? Confidentiality of data. You know, what's the process? Who's going to be pulling this data together? Varying state by state, the lack of or the use of precision technology. And that's going back again to the data and how that data is going to be used. And then probably one of the biggest ones is how to tie in with the regulatory network, whether CPA, state regulatory components.
Do any of the other groups have anything to add as far as obstacles that they noted down? Any other comment as far as obstacles? Group helped me in St. Louis. I know confidentiality was one of the big issues that came up quite frequently.
The resources
to do this actually, yes, the financial and the human resources, both. Okay. Bob.
Is it Bob? It's George.
George.
The area that I was focused on geographically was the
large farms of Central California, and I don't, at least my sense is that there isn't a very strong cooperative history or collaborative spirit among a lot of those farms, and I was trying to envision those groups forming and them sharing data and collectively trying to address a problem. I may be underestimating the potential there, especially with maybe some of the groups that are associated with the dairy industry or some of the produce buying groups, but to me that would be an obstacle, is just trying to pull together that kind of group.
For the sake of time, I think we're going to move on.
All right, so we were looking at what resources that we would need, and the first thing is people to do this. And they're going to need to be people that have experience, have field savvy, working with producers, setting up field trials if that's needed. They need to understand the agronomic science behind this. So it's going to be hard to take, brand new employees straight out of bachelor's degrees, you know, that maybe work in conservation districts and have them implement this successfully. They need to have a little bit more experience in that. You know, as a group of researchers, we always want, you know, more research too, right? So part of that gets into developing tools. You know, we already have tools, but we need to look at developing more tools. Validating some of the tools that we have. There's tools that exist in one part of the country but maybe haven't been validated elsewhere. We need to be careful to make sure we have those validations before we move too far too fast, because we might tell people to do things that aren't helpful, you know, for the bigger picture of the environment. Along with tools is software. You know, there's MMP out there, SNAP Plus, other nutrient management planning software. Some of that already allows a certain amount of flexibility for adaptive management in there, but there's always that ongoing need to continually support the development of, you know, larger planning type tools like that. Let's see, what else we got on that list? We have a lot of materials already in most of our state extension bulletins, whether it's PSNT information, stock nitrate tests. All that is adaptive management, but it's not packaged that way, and it's maybe not packaged coherently. So how do we pool that together in sort of that way? Along with that, you know, we need to have some protocols if people are going to be, you know, working towards this. I mean, more than just a bulletin, but how do they go about understanding, you take the stock nitrate sample, this way, you send it to the lab, how do you look at that data as a package and interpret the information? And how do we have protocols set up so that when people are doing things, like say, on-farm NRAID strip trials, that they're set up properly to actually collect useful information? Because we know we could set them up improperly a lot of ways and have it not be very useful. And let's see, the database thing. We could have collective databases for all this information, but that's really maybe the top tier of this. If you're resource limited, that's going to take a lot of people and money to kind of maintain and put together. That you can do a lot of data, a lot of effort can go into that, but there isn't a lot of resources. You could still do adaptive management without having some large combined database. It could be just an individual farmer's information that they're collecting and having it be useful. And of course, with all of this, you're going to have some sort of money to make it flow. So where that is that coming from? NRCS support, the state Department of Ag, Natural Resources, Environmental Protection type money. And that's all. I don't know if anybody has anything to add.
One thing is that NRCS contracts with tech service providers that come in and write a plan and they're gone. How is that going to work in with this?
I'm hoping you're asking the group. Good question. I mean, collaboratively, that TSP has to be a part of the picture in order for this to work. They can't work in a vacuum, and I'm not saying that they do necessarily. So. Sheila may discuss this a little bit, but I mean, we're kind of hoping that that dynamic changes a little bit over time, so that it's not just a flash in the pan that they're there to create a plan and then walk away.
In my state, often are crop consultants, and they're working with that producer ongoingly.
That's what we're trying to encourage, and you know, not just come in, provide a plan, walk away, but work with them on a continual basis, whether it's soil testing, looking at data, and the like. Anybody else on resources? If not, we'll move to. Again, key stakeholders in your state, and we'll start with the group back here.
Well, we broke the rules coming out of the gate because we didn't define what our state was. So what we have really is something for you to shoot at in terms of a brainstorming list. We didn't really try to, evaluate the relative importance of these people. So you could probably do this in about 2 minutes. You got your producer, whoever it is that producer works with on deciding what they're going to do as far as their crop production goes. Some form of a regulator, be it State Department of Ag or your environmental quality folks, some other farm-related organizations. So the list goes on, I'm sure. The question that I would pose to the group at large, my own question actually, is, is this thing going to work if you have all these people there? Or do you want to have predominantly producers and people that work directly with the producer? Should these people be hanging out in the periphery, basically approving the general process? Do they really need to be there, or can you succeed by making this a really fairly focused thing with the producers and their particular test data? So, good
good points, Dan, and I think that gets somewhat to the how would you know your efforts were successful, and I guess what you're wondering or questioning is whether when regulators, environmental interests, Farm Bureau, and whoever these folks at the bottom are, get involved, can you be successful?
Correct. Where do you get so many of these folks observing that the main action doesn't ever happen because they don't want to be observed that much?
But is it a progression? I mean, should they be brought in initially as this is set up, and then at some point the producer and that trusted advisor work to do what they need to do, and then there's a, you know, feedback through to those folks as far as a feedback loop?
Yeah, I think that's what I was suggesting, was that the more you can minimize the observers that aren't really involved, the better it might work.
Yeah, Dan, I just want to make a comment on that.
Yep.
And
we've
had in what's known as the Bay Farms Project down in Lancashire County, Pennsylvania, and some other counties in Pennsylvania, we've had the Environmental Defense Fund fund that project. And so there's been a scientist from the Environmental Defense Fund who has actually attended the producer meeting. And that did go well. But that's not the typical way. And we are uncertain, we don't know really how much that might have inhibited the process, because we have no control. But we're 6 years into that, and there's no problem at all. I think in the first year there was some suspicion, but we had no problem getting farmers to join up, and we had 90%, 95% attendance at the winter meeting, which is highly unusual. So when we set up a winter meeting, we know everybody's going to show up. And the Environmental Defense Fund scientist is there for most of those meetings. So.
But at your meetings, what is the percentage of people that are there that are the actual producers?
Yeah, it is only producers.
Okay.
And then there's myself, Warren, and the, well, I shouldn't say that, it's the producers and their advisors, so they bring their consultants in oftentimes. But that'd be myself and the environmental defense scientists, and sometimes there's NRCS comes in for part of it. So that's the first meeting. But that's not the typical way it's done. I think the typical way is going to probably go towards what you said, that there's going to be some type of feedback loop to the other people, the other stakeholders, the larger group.
You're putting into one the stakeholder group and the grower meeting. I mean,
yeah.
The grower meeting focus is the growers and the data and looking at that. So, yeah, you're intentionally not trying to draw the regulators, environmental interests, Farm Bureau, and the those type.
Okay. So. So I'm an example of a only partially informed as to what a stakeholder is.
Okay. So it really sounds like the concept here is the producer meeting. And so I think I was just confused by the term stakeholder, because I was assuming that the producer was a stakeholder, being as it was his farm and so forth, but maybe that's meant here to be more of a external stakeholders. Is that true?
The producer is one of the stakeholders.
Okay.
All right, we're gonna move to this group.
Do it a group effort. We took as a point of departure the stakeholders we'd all discussed initially and focused on, again, California and the irrigated basin in central Washington, and just tried to add in a couple of stakeholders we might not have discussed as a group earlier. And one of the big distinctions for those areas is that the owner of the overall business might not be the same decision maker for that specific field in terms of how that field would be managed. So we really have two levels of decision making on the farm. A second stakeholder that we didn't discuss that might be unique to these areas is the grain handler, the milk buyer, vegetable buyer, who wants to know what the environmental impact of the production that went into their product, or they were concerned about protein levels or other quality characteristics of the product. And then the third stakeholder we didn't discuss previously was a local health group, conservation district. Andy, you can help me on this. Public health agency was concerned about nitrates in the well water, and they would be ones that would be interfacing directly with growers about that issue.
Our session for the break, and I want to thank Chris for, and I also want to thank you for your participation in those interactive exercises. So let's thank Chris for setting this up and having a good discussion.